This is the Talk of Iowa Book Club. I'm Charity Nebbe. Storm Lake, Change, Resilience, and Hope in America's Heartland by Art Cullen is part memoir, part history, part local color, and part manifesto. It takes us to one of the most interesting small towns in Iowa, maybe one of the most interesting small towns in America, a town that has, sometimes reluctantly, embraced change and charted a course for a more prosperous and much more diverse future. Pull up a comfy chair. It's time for Book Club.
If you love this podcast, you should know that just like all the content produced by IPR, it's fueled by listener dollars. Hi, I'm Cassidy Arena, the Report for America Quorum member for Iowa Public Radio. Part of my job is reporting on Latino and other communities in Iowa who haven't gotten a lot of media attention. When you contribute to IPR, you help make that work possible. Membership contributions make up 57% of IPR's budget. That's huge. So do your part to support the podcasts and programs you enjoy. Go to iowapublicradio.org and tap on the red donate button. Thank you.
This is the Talk of Iowa Book Club. I'm Charity Nebbe. Art Cullen is the editor of the Storm Lake Times. It's a small town paper in northwest Iowa that publishes twice a week. He co-owns the paper with his brother John. His wife Dolores is a photographer, and his son Tom is a reporter. The paper has a circulation of 3,000, and it is community journalism at its finest. They cover the small stuff, and they're not afraid to cover the big stuff or take on controversial issues. Remember when the Des Moines Water Works sued Buena Vista, Calhoun, and Sac counties over nitrate pollution of the Raccoon River? The Storm Lake Times covered that story, all sides of it, and uncovered the source of secret funding, corporate agricultural money that was paying millions of dollars of legal bills on behalf of the counties. In 2017, Cullen won the Pulitzer Prize for a series of editorials that laid bare what was going on behind the scenes and helped readers understand Iowa's water issues and the political forces surrounding them. After winning the Pulitzer, the pressure was on to write a book. And the result is Storm Lake, Change, Resilience, and Hope in America's Heartland. That's what we've been reading. And in a few minutes, our expert readers will join the conversation. With me now is Art Cullen himself. Art, hello.
Well, thanks for having me, Charity. Well,
thank you so much for being here. And as I mentioned, the pressure was on to write a book when you won the Pulitzer Prize. That wasn't something you had considered before?
No. No, as I said, I could barely write more than 700 words at a sitting. And so the idea of writing 90,000 words was nothing that ever entered my imagination. Shortly after it was announced that we won a Pulitzer Prize, I got a call from two New York publishers, and both of whom were interested in me writing a book. And I laughed at them and said, there's no way I can write a book. And I hung up, and my brother John, the publisher, asked me, you know, who was that? And I said, oh, some New York book publisher thought I could write a book. And I told him, you know, I laughed him off. And he said, call him back and tell him you got a book. And I said, well, what would I write about? And he said, I don't know, just call it Storm Lake.
When you decided that you would write the book, in reading it, it felt like there was a lot that you wanted me to know as a reader. When you started trying to put the pieces together, what was your goal?
Well, it was to try and tell a story about the community through the eyes of the newspaper and the community's history and the region's history and Iowa history, and you know how this community evolved through the economic forces into this kind of polyglot community where 30 languages are spoken. So that's really what the book is about, is trying to explain Iowa and this rapidly changing rural community to the world.
Right, you're not just explaining Iowa to people from the outside, you're also, I feel like, explaining Iowa to Iowans as well. We have a, we'll talk about this more as the hour goes on, but we have a really deep urban-rural divide in this state. And I think a lot of people who may live in Iowa City, for example, don't really understand Northwest Iowa, or maybe haven't traveled west of I-35 more than a handful of times in their life. Did you feel like you were trying to reach across that divide?
Not really. What I was mainly trying to do from a rural perspective is to say, hey, we're here. You know, don't fly over us again. Hillary Clinton never campaigned in Storm Lake, and I think that's why she lost Iowa. She flew over rural Iowa. And John Kerry would tell you that he was winning until the 5th District at that time, Western Iowa, phoned in. So I was trying to explain rural Iowa from the perspective of why would people vote for Steve King and Donald Trump? And what is it about people in Calhoun County that makes them not trust Des Moines or Washington or Chicago, where the Board of Trade is? There's a deep populism that exists in rural Iowa. So to understand rural Iowa, I think you need to understand populism.
Introduce us just briefly to your hometown, to Storm Lake. It's not a very big town, about 10,000 people?
Yeah, the census says it's 10,000. We believe it's closer to 15,000 because we're undercounted. When somebody knocks at the door of a Latino household, they aren't prone to answer because they're in fear of being deported, even if they're legal. So there's a huge undercount in Latino communities. And it's a meatpacking town. We have a Tyson pork plant here and a Tyson turkey processing facility, and then 15 miles north is one of the largest egg processing facilities in America, Rembrandt Foods, and where they produce tankers of liquid eggs and 5 million chickens. And so this is probably the densest livestock area in North America, you know, Northwest Iowa, mm-hmm. Sioux County, Buena Vista County, Plymouth County, Lamar's. Those are all very intensive livestock producing counties. And so we're a meatpacking center. And as I said, about 30 languages or dialects are spoken here. And 90% of our elementary school are children of color. And about 75% of them are Latino. So there's definitely a Jalisco flavor in Storm Lake. And also we have a large Laotian settlement here. We're one of, I think, 4 locations in Iowa with a Buddhist temple. So it's a very unusual rural community.
Absolutely. And it's a vibrant and thriving rural community as well. You write about the farm crisis in Iowa, and most of us who live in the state know that that was devastating to farmers, but also to small towns all over the state. And a lot of small towns never really came back after the farm crisis. But Storm Lake is vibrant and thriving.
Right, and it's mainly because of meatpacking. And it's completely transformed Storm Lake. And so while communities like Cherokee have been struggling, you know, just 22 miles away, or Pocahontas has the highest population losses in the state now, and that's 25 miles away. But Storm Lake has been growing. But 67 of Iowa's 99 counties have lost population every year since 1920. So there's this hollowing out of rural Iowa that's occurring. But then there's these few outposts where Latinos come in and revitalize communities like Columbus Junction or Denison or Waterloo. And that's all involving meatpacking.
One of the things that I really love about your book are the character sketches that you do throughout the book. You introduce us to so many individuals who live in Buena Vista County or who live in Storm Lake, and you introduce us to people from all walks of life. But I think that so often when we talk about small towns in Iowa or rural areas in Iowa, we tend to just lump groups together. We talk about the farmers, we talk about the immigrants. We don't put human faces on these individuals. And you do that. Is that something that you also try to do through your work at the Storm Lake Times to make sure that we're remembering that we're talking about human beings?
Well, yeah. One of the first, functions of a community newspaper is to run pictures of kids and dogs. And, that's the first rule, names are news. And so we've always tried to introduce, especially Latinos to the newspaper and in the newspaper and reading about their lives. I mean, when you read about somebody swimming the Mekong River to freedom, or crossing the Sonoran Desert to get to Storm Lake, these are inspiring stories that that are much more compelling and bring life, obviously, to journalism.
We are going to take a short break. Art Cullen is the author of Storm Lake, Change, Resilience, and Hope in America's Heartland. He's also the editor of the Storm Lake Times and won the Pulitzer Prize in 2017. We will bring our expert readers into the conversation when we continue in just a moment. This is the Talk of Iowa Book Club.
If you love listening to Charity Nebbe's conversations on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast, you'll love hearing her other podcast, Talk of Iowa. She brings the same friendly tone, sense of humor, and empathy to all her conversations. Subscribe to the Talk of Iowa podcast from Iowa Public Radio. You'll hear stories that will move you and explore topics that will help you better understand your neighbors and your community. Subscribe wherever you're listening right now.
This is the Talk of Iowa Book Club from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We are talking about Storm Lake, Change, Resilience, and Hope in America's Heartland by Art Cullen, Pulitzer Prize winner and editor of the Storm Lake Times. Art is here with us today, and I also want to bring our expert readers into the conversation. Robert Leonard is a journalist and an anthropologist. He is the news director at KNIA-KRLS in Pella, author of Deep Midwest, and writes occasional pieces for the New York Times. Hello, Bob.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you for being here today, and welcome back to the show.
Oh, yeah. I look forward to it.
Rene Rocha is also with us today, professor of political science at the University of Iowa. He's a leading scholar of immigration politics and policy. Rene, welcome.
Hi, Charity, Art, and Bob. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Earlier, I was bringing up the urban-rural divide with Art, and I do want to explore that a little bit with all of us here now. Bob, you live in Knoxville. You are a native Iowan, but you lived in New Mexico for many years. So you've got a broad perspective, but as a small-town guy, reading Storm Lake, tell me what you see.
Well, reading Storm Lake, it was a delight. I mean, it's a wonderful book. It's got multiple story arcs, some great characters, great history, ecology, dealing with issues of climate, agricultural policy, the change in Iowa since I was a kid. It's just a delightful, character-driven book, and it helps that Art's quite the character driving the narrative.
Thanks, Bob.
Well, and of course, Bob, you tell small town stories all the time. And I mentioned your pieces in the New York Times. You're often a voice from the heartland, trying to help maybe the urban elite that we hear so much about understand Iowa and Iowans. Is that something that you feel there is a deep gulf, a deep divide existing?
Well, it's a huge divide. It's a chasm. It's more than just flyover country. I think that a lot of people on the coast, they don't know our narratives. A lot of narratives about Iowa are constructed by people not from here, and that's why Art's work is so important. They tend to think of us as, they either romanticize the farmers, or we're all farmers, we're all wearing straw caps, we're all rosy-cheeked Farm Bureau you know, kids.
Well, and Renee, you are not a native Iowan, but you've been here for quite a while. You live in Iowa City, and this the rural part of the state isn't one you're very familiar with. What do you feel that you learned from reading Storm Lake?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, it's a chasm. I know it's a chasm because I stand on one side of a chasm, vaguely sort of looking out. And so that was one of the absolutely wonderful things about reading this book, was being able to sort of read about things which are sort of in the very vaguely familiar, but which I don't really have a strong grounding in, not having been a native Iowan, but also, you know, I've actually lived here for, 15 or so years almost, and there's still so much about the state that I don't know. You know, you say very few people have traveled. Some people have, you know, maybe not traveled west of I-35. You know, my joke is I've traveled west of I-35 because the Jordan Creek Mall is west of I-35. So, you know, but other than that, you know, my time in the western part of the state is really, I don't even want to say it's minimal because it's non-existent. And so being able to learn about it, both in terms of some very like substantive knowledge, learning about conservation, sustainable agriculture, and learning about the sort of character sketches, as you were mentioning, was just really, really, really enlightening. I enjoyed it immensely. What a wonderful book.
Well,
thank you.
Art, I want to start with something that you start with in the book, and that is those of us who grew up in Iowa, at least when I grew up in Iowa, we took our fifth grade Iowa history class, and that's when we really learned about the history of our state. But that history was not particularly deep. And one of the events that I think we all learned about was called the Spirit Lake Massacre. And that is a story that, when we learned it, was told purely from the perspective of white settlers. And it was not a complete story. It was not Native people attacking settlers with no provocation. There's a whole backstory there about the tricking and murdering of Native people that happened before. Why was it important for you to start there? Was that an effort to shake up our understanding of what we think we know?
Well, because actually, yes, it was, because, I mean, I was taught the same thing, and especially living in Storm Lake, which is 60 miles south of Spirit Lake, we were fed this myth by white historians, you know, people in power write history, and the real story is that the Dakota people were poisoned by Henry Lott, who was a whiskey trader near Humboldt, Iowa. He'd come up from Boone. He'd poisoned 75 Dakota people, and then Ink Paduta, the Dakota chief in this region, retaliated by murdering the Gardner family in their cabin at Spirit Lake. But nobody ever told us it was in retaliation.
Right.
Again, as you said, it was just unprovoked. And also, if you really think about it, these were indigenous people, just as the people who live in Storm Lake today from Jalisco are indigenous people. And they share blood. You know, they met at Cahokia 1,000 years ago, the native people of North America and the native people of Latin America, and exchanged corn and blood. And there's probably Iowa and Dakota blood in people from Jalisco who are here today. They were here first.
You also write a lot about Iowa political history. And I will tell you, and Bob, I know you and I talked about this as well, that with that political history, there is almost, to me, there was almost a frantic feeling, Art, of, don't you remember this? Don't you remember that this happened? Do you feel like Iowans have forgotten our history?
Yeah, and I think that it's an amazing, I don't even know if kids today study Iowa history. I really don't know. I don't know that my kids were subjected to it. A lot of people don't remember that Iowa has its roots in, you know, progressive, you know, anti-slavery traditions, while at the same time having these kind of predatory a predatory beginning to the state. We stole this land. Julian Dubuque stole the lead mines, you know, from the native people near Dubuque. You know, so the history is more complicated than we know, but it shapes everything. There's a reason that people are stuck on a reservation in Rosebud, the Rosebud Reservation in South Dakota. It's because of us, you know, and that story is playing out constantly today as we treat indigenous people in meatpacking plants, just like we treated the Dakota people when Henry Lott found them.
Bob, what would you like to add on your thoughts about how art tackles our political history in the state?
Well, I don't know. I thought it was wonderful. But if you're of a certain age, all of a sudden he evoked these wonderful memories I had of the Governor Ray administration and of Harold Hughes and his challenges and the progressive past of Iowa that it's almost, you know, it seems like it's almost been writ clean in 2016, but it hasn't. It's a deep progressive history. And the important thing that art's doing is that, like the Black Lives Matter movement, it's busting up myths. People act like it's our history. These monuments are our history. No, some of them are, certainly, but a lot of them are not. They're myths, and they're erected by the victors. They don't tell the true history, and it's important to get the real history out there, like Art did with Spirit Lake. And it's not rejecting our history. It's a more fuller version, a richer version of our history. And for some people, especially on the conservative right, it's like they've got this Rambo-esque beer goggles on, looking at the past, picking out, you know, rugged individuals that fit their narratives, and they create a past that never really existed except in their minds.
Renee, what was it like for somebody who probably didn't know a lot of that history that Art was sharing? Looking at Iowa politics, of course, there are a few people who loom large, but a lot of those names have been largely forgotten.
Yeah, no. And both being able to learn more about the history of indigenous people and the original sort of immigration of Anglos into the state was illuminating, but also the sort of narrative arc here that Art mentioned about the sort of removal of the indigenous population, and then how he circles back at the end of the book, like he was saying a few moments ago, and talks about the return of indigenous people. You know, I don't know the story about how corn got into Iowa. You know, I understand that it, you know, originates in Latin America, and how does it get to the Midwest, and this idea of indigenous people coming together for trade purposes, blood being exchanged, the blood of the indigenous people returning, you know, is a really, really powerful narrative arc to sort of close the book on, and, you know, really sort of cements this sort of next sort of unfinished chapter, I feel like, as far as what the next phase of these communities are as they continue to diversify over the next couple of years.
Art, you also bring your love of characters to your writing of history as well. I did not know that Henry Wallace was prone to participating in seances and talking with the dead. So thank you for filling out some of the character studies of history as well.
Harold Hughes.
And Renee, I'll let you kick this next section off. Let's talk about immigration in Iowa. And Storm Lake is, as Art pointed out, one of those communities that has really been shaped by immigration in a very powerful way, 30 different languages spoken, and it puts a human face on immigration. Through his work, we understand a lot more of why people are drawn to Iowa. What do you think the most important takeaways are from his writing there?
The idea that sort of rural farm life is romanticized from the perspective of outsiders who don't really understand it. This is another piece of sort of Iowa life, which people in the state might be very attuned to, but which I think people far away are really have a hard time wrapping their heads around. You know, so I grew up along the border in South Texas, sort of around McAllen or Brownsville, Texas. And when I moved to Iowa, you know, my mom, taking pity on her son, would buy sweetbread from her local bakery and mail it to me because, you know, heaven forbid her son not have access to, you know, to the sort of stuff she was used to. And she could not for years wrap her head around the concept that I could just drive 5 minutes away to a bakery, right, where they were shipping stuff in from a, you know, the satellite bakery from that they're shipping stuff in from a larger bakery in West Liberty, Iowa, and I could get stuff that was just as good as anything I could buy, right? And so she spent years shipping me these boxes before I could finally convince her that it was unnecessary, right? Or whenever, you know, I bring people in from around the country to come speak at the University of Iowa, and we take them sort of out to eat, and they're just like befuddled at some of the high quality Mexican food that we can offer. It's just not really well understood. And I think being able to show that was another sort of really important contribution here of Art's book, right? And it really talks about, you know, the situation that immigrants are finding themselves in the community. It's, you know, it's immensely complex, right? This idea of supporting these communities economically, but is still having to have this fear that comes largely from the federal government. It's not even necessarily always coming from local communities, having both and contributing to communities and finding friends and then finding sort of resistance, right? And having to really sort of navigate those dual forces. And why that struggle, which we may see as sort of very, very burdensome, is still a decision that makes sense for people who are choosing to come and settle in Iowa, which you get from some of the chapters Art wrote where he travels back to Mexico and goes back into those communities in the Guadalajara area and you know, searches for the reasons why people choose to come and stay here and finds that the reasons, you know, aren't that different from the reasons in which previous generations of immigrants decided to come to the state.
Well, and the fondness that so many of the immigrants that Art writes about have for where they come from, I think that's something that gets lost in our conversation about immigration in this country as well. A lot of them have a deep love for their homeland. They may go back if they possibly can. And of course, some have fled terrible, terrible conditions, but a lot of them didn't want to leave, didn't want to have to come to the United States to work, Renee.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And, you know, this is actually something which is largely a construction of our politics. You know, we know that there was long patterns of circular migration, of people coming in and, you know, sort of Art talks about the book as sort of the things you can buy with $5,000. You can buy a new house for $5,000 in some of these communities. Come here, earn some money, return back to their home with the capital that they sort of earn.
Let's take just a short break here, and I want to talk more about that in just a moment, Renee. We are talking about Storm Lake: Change, Resilience, and Hope in America's Heartland. And this is the Talk of Iowa Book Club.
If you love books and this podcast, join IPR's Talk of Iowa Book Club Facebook group. You can ask Charity what she's reading for work or for fun, get inside information about upcoming book club episodes, answer questions to shape our book club discussions, and find other like-minded readers to share observations and recommendations with. Join our community of readers in IPR's Talk of Iowa Book Club Facebook group.
This is the Talk of Iowa Book Club from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We are talking about Storm Lake: Change, Resilience, and Hope in America's Heartland by Art Cullen, Pulitzer Prize winner and editor of the Storm Lake Times. Art is here along with Bob Leonard, a journalist and anthropologist, author of Deep Midwest, and Renee Rocha, professor of political science at the University of Iowa. And Renee, before the break, you were talking about how so much of our conversation about immigration is based on a mythology.
No, again, this idea that this sort of immigration is necessarily permanent, right? That it's not sort of circular, that people are unattached to their communities, that they don't want to go back. You know, it's not always been the case. And again, like Art was sketching in the book, there's a lot of reasons to come to the United States. But then the idea of return was often common until our federal policy really changed it, made it so difficult to enter into the United States. The border got so militarized, circular migration just became unfeasible, right? And then really sort of created a situation in which immigrants were coming into the United States, having to resettle. You know, one of the things that I like about this book is, in some ways, I view the story as a little bit of a sequel to another book I love called The Devil's Highway, which is a story of immigrants that are marching through, the Arizona desert, and a terrible, series of tragedies unfold before them. But that's a very compelling narrative. But what's missing is sort of why are they going? What is on the other side for those who make the journey and are able to do it successfully? And sort of Art's book shows us what's on the other side for those immigrants.
Bob, I know you've spent a lot of time in your life in Mexico. And one of the things that you and I talked about when we talked about having this conversation was also the values and the culture that immigrants are bringing with them when they come. And that's another part of the conversation that we often overlook.
Well, yeah, I spent, parts of 8 years in northern Mexico and working there. And the people that I knew, there were opportunities in the United States that they would like to offer, but there was no doubt in my mind that they would rather stay in Mexico. And one of the things that I think has hardened our border is in part Americans not wanting to recognize our responsibility for some of the problems in Mexico and Latin America, our history with those countries where it's been pretty exploitive. We don't really want to take any responsibility for our voracious drug appetite that causes so much social instability south of the border. I think that we need to recognize our role in some of the stuff that is happening down the border.
We only have about 10 minutes left, and we could talk all day, but let's turn the conversation to the environment. And of course, that's a very broad topic. We're talking about conservation, water quality, and climate change. But Art, in Iowa, so often I feel like these battle lines get drawn between agriculture and farmers on one side and environmentalists on the other side. It is not that clear cut at all if you take the time to really talk to people. But that is the battle that you walked right into. That's what you won the Pulitzer Prize for in trying to sort out that battle. But what do we need to understand about the really serious environmental threats facing us in Iowa?
Well, I think I'd look at that derecho that came through and took out 10 million acres of cropland and say, to suggest to you, Jesus, we've never seen anything like that before, but it's the new normal. The derecho came amid a drought in west central Iowa that is seriously stunting corn yields this year. Last year, Pacific Junction and Hamburg, Iowa, were washed down the Missouri River, literally washed down the river. They disappeared. And this is the new normal for Iowa. In 40 years, we might not be able to grow corn in southern Iowa because of climate change. There is a 50-year drought that's onsetting in the Great Plains and the Southwest that was expected to come in 2050. It's here already, according to NASA. And we face huge, huge challenges in agriculture and food production. As soon as we come out of this pandemic, we're facing real issues with climate change, immediate and urgent issues that we can turn around in Iowa. In fact, Iowa can be a major a leader in the battle against climate change through different agricultural practices that we're all very familiar with, including cover crops, more pastures, more grazing, less number two yellow corn. We can solve the problem in the Gulf of Mexico simply by using cover crops, but only 1% of Buena Vista County is planted in cover crops in the winter. So that's really the issue boiled down in a nutshell. We need to build a much more resilient agriculture, from livestock to land conservation, everything.
I've hosted a lot of conversations about agriculture over the years, Art, and there are so many nuances to these conversations. I mean, one of the big problems that farmers face is, of course, the bottom line is the most important thing. They're running a business. However, when you sit down and talk with farmers, you do find a strong land ethic among most farmers and an understanding that this land needs to continue to be productive for the future. You also find that farmers who have implemented sustainable agriculture policies often find that there are economic benefits as well, or at least not economic liabilities. What do you think it takes to move this conversation forward and see real change?
Honestly, real change is happening because of people like Bob Leonard. He's been preaching this in the New York Times for some time, and along with Matt Russell and others, the Practical Farmers of Iowa, they are starting to make a difference. There is currently a bill in Congress to pay farmers for environmental services. So if you pay a farmer $1 more per acre to plant grass than corn, he'll do it. Windmills prove it. Farmers are willing to give up crop production for wind royalty checks. And so it's not that they have an addictive need to plant corn. It's just the only game in town. If the federal government paid farmers for environmental services just simply to plant grass along rivers, right now it's a cost share. You got to come up with 10% yourself. Well, why should I come up with 10? Why should I pay 10% to take land out of production? Pay me to take land out of production, and I'll do it.
Renee, let's talk politics for a moment here. Art, of course, writes a lot about what happened in Iowa in 2016 and the politics of Northwest Iowa and the politics of the rest of the state of Iowa and some of the people driving politics in this state. We're going through so much right now with the pandemic and with, of course, the looming election and everything else. Renee, do you see Iowa changing?
I mean, in the long run, it's certainly going to change, right? As we're talking about, you're having these pressures which are going to force greater attunement to ideas like conservation, sustainability. You have the demographic changes that we've already talked about, and those demographic changes are one day going to drive major political change. The question is what happens in the short term, and in the short term, it's a much more complicated story, and you in some ways get this sort of ricochet effect where even if the change over the long term is in one direction, the change can go in the other way in the short term. And you have people who are sort of reacting to the economic pressures that they're in, especially as you have some of these uncertainties around agriculture. And then they're also reacting to some of the cultural changes. And in some ways, you know, Art's talking about the strong populism vibe, and the populism vibe can move you in a Democratic or a Republican direction, but those types of anxieties are sort of exacerbating that sort of Trump, Steve King side of populism. And, you know, that we've certainly seen that vibe become more prominent in Iowa over the past couple of years. And, you know, it's going to be something that will certainly stay, I think, part of our politics in the short term for sure.
Yeah. We will see. Renee Rocha, thank you so much. Renee Rocha is a professor of political science at the University of Iowa. Thank you also to Bob Leonard, a journalist and anthropologist, and also author of Deep Midwest. And of course, Art Cullen, the author of Storm Lake, Change, Resilience, and Hope in America's Heartland. I'm Charity Nebbe, and this is the Talk of Iowa Book Club. See you next time. The Talk of Iowa Book Club is produced by Caitlin Harrop and edited by Monica Starr, with production assistance on this program from Matt Alvarez. We get technical support from Dennis Reese, and our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. This podcast is a production of Iowa Public Radio.
The way Iowans consume news has changed a lot since the coronavirus pandemic hit in 2020. But people here still need to know what's going on in the state every day. What are leaders saying?
The virus isn't going away until we have a vaccine.
How are medical professionals reacting, and how is it affecting hospital staff and schools?
Those weekends where you are on the phone and sending emails and, you know, dealing with people with a very emotional issue has been really hard.
I'm Clay Masters. In 2021, Iowa Public Radio is starting a podcast called Hear First. It's a quick daily show for your work week that catches you up on state news as you begin your day. Get analysis from IPR's team of reporters.
Most of the improvement in the unemployment picture comes from more than 90,000 Iowans no longer looking for work.
Find out when high-profile politicians are in the state.
Back at the state fair!
Learn about what's going on in state government and discover Iowans you might not hear about otherwise.
This is the first time I have spoken with a woman without documents who's also unafraid of sharing her story on the radio.
Subscribe to Iowa Public Radio's Hear First wherever you get your podcasts.